Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
This is America on the Road, named Best Radio Show by the International Automotive Media Conference, and now in its 30th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. I'm Jack Nerad. With me is co-host Chris Teague. Chris, so good to see you. Good to talk with you, as always, about cars.
Good to see you as well, Jack. A lot going on this week. How are you?
It's a crazy week, isn't it? I mean, and it'll get crazier with this show. It's already been crazy just putting the show together. So we'll see what we put together here, but I think we'll have some fun with it. You know, it's New York Auto Show week. That's been going on in New York, and there's news out of that, so we'll be talking about that. We'll give you our thoughts on some of the most important vehicles unveiled at the New York Auto Show. Hyundai, Nissan, Kia, Porsche, Genesis, they all showed off some pretty interesting stuff, so we'll talk with you about that. Meanwhile, there is plenty of trouble in EV land. Ford has just laid off or transferred about two-thirds of its workers at the Rouge plant that builds the F-150 Lightning. And maybe you can pick one up cheap, Chris. I know you love that vehicle, right?
Yeah, it's just a matter of the price tag for me. That's the only thing holding me back.
Yeah, well, I think it's holding a lot of people back these days, among other things. But even more dire news at Fisker, my local car company. This EV brand is cut prices drastically on its 2023 models. I didn't know there were a lot of 2023 models, but it's cut its prices very drastically. It's trying to fend off imminent bankruptcy. Investors in the company have been told to prepare for the worst. So there you go. We'll have our comments on all this mayhem coming up. And it's quite a week, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah, never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment in this auto business of ours, which is what makes it so much fun and so interesting. Let's do a little business here. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com, EMLancey.com, the publisher of my latest book, Dance in the Dark, and Mercury Insurance. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your auto and home insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury, so imagine how much you could save. Get a quote today at DrivingToday.com/auto insurance. That's DrivingToday.com/auto-insurance. And we lead the league in hyphens, among other things, don't we, Chris? As longtime listeners of the show know, Chris lives at one end of the country, I live at the other, and each week we get together to talk about cars, the car industry, and how you can save some money on your vehicle. We also road test a couple of vehicles, and Chris, tell us what you're going to road test this week.
I spent a frustratingly frigid week in the Genesis GV60. It's an all-electric SUV, and I can't wait to tell you all about it.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear, you know, what that thing was like in a frigid week in Maine. My car was a 2024 Mazda CX-90S Premium Plus, and I had it for a week in my end of the country. Much more welcoming weather than I think you went through, Chris. This week, our special guest is Sri Pakam. He's a Ford engineer, and he'll be talking about the F-150 Lightning Switchgear, which is a really cool concept car that they have. And, you know, we kind of took a swipe at Lightning a little earlier in the program, but this is a very cool truck, and so we'll be talking with him about that. So we've got a lot of show for you this week. Stay with us, and we'll be right back right here on America on the Road. Welcome back to America on the Road with Christine Jack. We're back with you. It's Auto Show Week, a big auto show going on in New York. You guys have mostly heard of New York, I imagine. It's pretty close to Chris, a little farther away from me, but a lot going on in New York, maybe not as much as in prior years, but some pretty cool stuff there. I think we talked about one of the coolest vehicles, I think, in last week's show, and maybe it deserves a little more comment this time around. It's the Kia K4. Their replacement for the Forte. And I think there's a lot to like about this vehicle. What's your take on it, Chris?
I think so, too. They're offering two powertrains. The styling is excellent. And I saw recently, actually yesterday, that they're going to bring a wagon version of the vehicle here to the United States. So it's going to tickle my fancy just the way, you know, I'm very happy about that.
Yeah. The auto journalists around the world are thrilled by that, and certainly American auto journalists, the only people who care about station wagons anymore. It's an odd thing, but we do. I think it would probably be a very cool thing, too. And talk about cool, oddball vehicles. Hyundai showed the revised version of the Santa Cruz. You know, it's a vehicle you and I tested out in on the West Coast several years ago when it was first out. And I remember that fondly, riding around with you. That was a lot of fun. And now it's changed a bit. And I think it's, they say it's getting truckier, maybe less soft looking is a way to put it. You think this is going to help?
I hope so. I mean, if you look at the competitors, right, the Ford Maverick, it's small, but it looks like a truck. And the previous Santa Cruz looked a lot like the Tucson. It looked a lot like the Hyundai Tucson in front, and it was very soft, as you said, looking. So I think anything that makes it look a little beefier, you know, Honda did it with the Ridgeline, and I think it helped them. So hopefully it boosts the Santa Cruz a little bit.
Yeah, I hope so. I really like that truck. I think the thing that really slugged the Santa Cruz versus the Maverick is its pricing, more so than what it looked like. I think it provided a lot, and I really love the turbo version of the Santa Cruz. I think it's just a blast to drive, but we'll see what happens with that. They probably didn't fix the pricing so much, but Nissan has a revised Kicks. What's your take on that vehicle?
It's also beefier looking. Everybody's kind of making these things look more square and more muscular. So I never had problems with the Kicks. I never was a big fan of it, but I think for the price point and the size and what people got out of it, it was a good value. But I like the new styling better than the old. I'll say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I love vehicles like that that are affordable. I mean, it competes with the Trax, the Chevrolet Trax, the Buick Envista. I think that you talked about a show or so ago. And I love to see those kind of vehicles come into the market or get revised in the market and not vanish from the market.
Did I see they're offering all-wheel drive for the Kicks now for the first time? Is that true?
I think so. I can't confirm that, but okay. I think that is very likely to be the case. Interesting. I don't know whether that's going to help or not. I think you're talking about a price point there that will be higher. If they can offer it at just a very small premium, yeah.
They are offering all-wheel drives.
Porsche did some North American debuts. Those kind of didn't used to be all that newsworthy, right? Because we've seen them before. And this is certainly a global industry, but the Macan EV and the Taycan Turbo S were both shown in New York, and pretty cool stuff on both sides, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Taycan or Taycan or however you want to say it, it's a compelling vehicle, but again, it's just so expensive, and the range, I guess if you're looking for a performance EV, that's where it is, but there's a lot of trade-offs with that one. And the Macan EV, I actually can't wait to see it. I think, you know, we've been hearing teases for gosh, probably 3 years now on that SUV. And now that it's finally out in the open, I think, you know, it looks great. So I hope it performs as well as it looks.
Yeah, it looks great. We'll see if there's a market for it. And I think on the premium side, they don't ask for that much more money for an EV. And maybe that will set it apart from and give it some chance of success. There's a new Hyundai or revised Hyundai Tucson kind of in the same vein, I guess, as the Santa Cruz. Do you have a quick take on that?
I think the Tucson was already a fantastic SUV in all its forms. So good value, good performance, nice interior. So anything that kind of moves that formula forward a few steps is a welcome one for me.
Yeah, I think we kind of kicked that around. I think I road tested that in a fairly recent show. And then Genesis has shown some pretty cool stuff. Well, we're not certain how many of those things are actually going to see the light of day. But they also announced this Magma performance division, which is interesting, you know, kind of their answer to AMG from Mercedes-Benz and the M cars from BMW.
I think they've done a good job with the colors and, you know, the sort of flashy get your attention style there. You know, their vehicles already were pretty nice performers as they were. But, you know, I think anything that moves them closer to competition with BMW, Mercedes, Audi is just going to be that much better for them. And they were already pretty strongly competitive with those brands, but this is going to help them even more.
Yeah, well, I think Genesis vehicles are great values, and I think I reviewed one last week, and you're reviewing one this week, so yeah. We can, you know, beat that drum a little bit more. Bad news for Ford, I guess, in that the Rouge EV plant, actually about 2/3 of its workers are being either sent elsewhere or being asked to retire. That's a pretty big deal. I mean, it's they had 2,100 people working at this plant, essentially on the F-150 Lightning electric pickup truck, which Chris Teague would love to have. It's just not selling the way they hoped it would sell, the way they thought it would sell. They thought they would have dominance in that segment. And they're doing well in terms of sales, but they're just the overall sales in the segment aren't what they hoped to be.
Look, you know, the prices that I mentioned this to you off the air, the price is the thing that held me back. And granted, you know, I'm testing a diesel pickup truck this week that's $90,000. But when you're looking at one of the more consumer-friendly F-150 Lightnings, you're looking at spending $80,000, $90,000, $100,000. And while I get that automakers are currently losing an average of like $6,000 on every EV they sell, you know, it's just not as compelling a vehicle as a gas pickup truck would be at that price. So I hope they're able to get it together. You know, Ford lost a big chunk of money on their EV business last year. So, you know, I don't know. It's tough to see where this is going to come out. You know, they can't charge less without losing more money, and they can't make more without selling them. So it seems like a really tough spot to be in.
Yeah, it really is a tough spot to be in. And they're looking, even the cheapest model is well over $50,000, about $55,000, $56,000. They have some retail spiffs on them, or some retail credits, quote unquote, some incentives, $7,500 on some of these vehicles. They have a new flash model, a 320-mile range that is about $75,000, but that's not really all that enticing when you're hoping to spend more like $50,000 for a pretty nicely equipped F-150.
Yeah, you know, this is sort of the chicken and the egg question, right? You know, how do you generate demand and produce enough volume to spread out your cost over more units of production? Yeah. It's just, you know, seems like a challenge that I can't wrap my head around it. I have no idea how
we lose money on every one we sell, but we'll make it up in volume. I mean, that doesn't work in the car industry or any other industry for that matter. And yeah. Fisker is finding that out. I mean, they're cutting prices drastically. I mean, you can now get a Fisker Sport, 2023 Fisker Sport, for a list price of $27,000, which is down $14,000 from the previous base price, and big rake-offs on the other models. I don't know who is willing to step into the breach and buy one of these 2023 Fiskers. It's a kind of a cool vehicle in a way. Styling is interesting. There's some interesting features about it, but like, who's going to do that now? I just don't get who's going to wade into that pool.
Yeah, you know, it feels a little bit like Fisker shot themselves in the foot here. There are reports coming out that they shipped vehicles without taking deposits. They lost, you know, payment checks, and that took them 3 or 4 months to like get the accounting of their first shipments done. But like you point out, it's a compelling vehicle. Like, there's some features in the car that no other vehicles have. And, you know, Fisker's a great designer himself, so it looks great. It's a shame that it's gone down this road, but the early reviews have not been positive. I think it's kind of a half-baked thing that they've been shipping out. So, you know, I hope they're able to figure something out. But if not, somebody's going to get a fire sale on the company itself if they actually go under.
Yeah, I mean, there's some rumors that Nissan was going to pick up the tab here, or, you know, buy into this, or maybe purchase the entire company. I'm not certain where those negotiations have gone. That always struck me as, why does Nissan need that headache?
Well, Nissan backed out of the $400 million deal. That's what Fisker wrote in their filing to the SEC. So that doesn't mean they're not going to swoop in at the last minute for a discount.
Right. Maybe it's a negotiating tactic, right? We'll romance you a little bit and then walk away and then maybe come back to you.
Who knows?
Yeah, who knows is right. Well, when we come back, we will be road testing some vehicles that we know will make it to the road because we have driven them, including the Genesis GV60 that you were driving in frigid weather in your neck of the woods. And I was driving the Mazda CX-90, a three-row vehicle from Mazda. So stay with us for that, and we'll be right back right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Nierad back with you for road test time. We're so glad you're with us. We do appreciate it. And to show our appreciation, we have some interesting vehicles to talk about. Chris, you were driving an all-electric vehicle, a battery electric vehicle from Genesis, a luxury vehicle. Actually, a vehicle I like quite a bit. In frigid weather, very challenging weather, which is always all the more challenging to an electric. I want to hear how it did.
Yeah, you know, Maine is one of those places that makes everybody feel like a sucker because it gives you a couple of weeks of nice weather. We were in the 60s for like 2 weeks, and then we dropped into like the 20s and 30s for most of last week, and we got a bunch of snow and ice while I had the Genesis. So it was quite an interesting week. But taking a step back, the GV60 is – so Genesis is Hyundai's premium brand, if you guys listening don't know. And the GV60 is similar underneath to the Kia EV6 and the Hyundai IONIQ 5 and IONIQ 6, but it's not exactly the same. It uses the same platform and has different batteries and drive motors. But Genesis offers it in three configurations. The standard one, the standard configuration starts at around $54,000. There's a mid-range advanced trim for around $62,000. And I tested the all-wheel drive performance model, which is the range-topping version, for around $72,000 after everything. And so this is absolutely priced like a premium vehicle. Jack, before I go too far, have you driven the GV60? What do you think of the styling?
I have. I like both the exterior styling and I really like the interior styling. I think the interior is just marvelous. I think it's really terrific. They've done such a good job of differentiating it from those other vehicles you mentioned. I think you can't see the resemblance in a lot of ways when you're inside the vehicle. And I think from the exterior styling, same kind of deal. This is a good looking car. I think Genesis is knocking it out of the park, I think, in terms of interior and exterior styling.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned, I've said this a few times now, the first Genesis I tested was a GV70, and it was the first vehicle that people actually stopped to take pictures of. And the GV60 turns heads in traffic, so definitely a great looking vehicle. But the performance here is what I really want to talk about first. So the performance all-wheel drive version gets 429 horsepower, it gets 516 pound-feet of torque, and there's a 10-second boost mode that jumps that horsepower to 483. So I will tell you, under full throttle, without the boost on, this is a quick SUV. So there's no denying that, you know, you can roast a few, you know, unsuspecting other people off the line. But as my kid's favorite feature of this vehicle is, you know, with your foot's on the gas and you hit the boost, it literally pulls the blood out of the front of your face and puts it into the back of your head. It's an exhilarating experience, and it's very unexpected from a vehicle that is otherwise pretty sedate and comfortable, but it's a really thrilling thing. But the trade-off here is that it has 21-inch wheels, and it drops the range to 235 miles. You know, you can get the lesser trims with range up to 294 miles. But again, the trade-off here for that performance is just you can't drive as long without stopping to charge. You know, the ride quality here is pretty good. You know, you do feel the battery's weight in this vehicle. I think I mentioned this with the Ford Mustang Mach-E. When you're going over, we have these large, I call them speed humps, but they're real like speed tables. When you're going over that, it kind of wallows a little bit. You can feel the weight underneath, and it's low in the vehicle, so you're not like waving, but you know, you definitely feel the weight there. Other than that, Jack, the ride is smooth. It's remarkably quiet inside, even without the engine noise to kind of drown out some of the road and wind sound. And even with those big 21-inch wheels on sort of the crusty roads that we had here last week, had no problems at all. Again, you have all-wheel drive, so traction here is pretty confident too. So no complaints about the driving experience at all, other than the range. Again, you know, 235 miles. I think for most people, it's probably okay. But if you don't have a home charger, which I don't right now, it gets to be a little bit of a hassle. So inside, the car comes standard with synthetic leather. Mine had Napa leather, and the front seats in this vehicle have a lumbar massage feature, so the back cushion massages you rather than the seat bottom, which some do. Heated and ventilated front seats, heated rear seats, and to further your point about the interior, and this is what really impresses me, since you don't have a transmission in the middle of the vehicle, the floor is flat, which means they can add a ton of storage under the floating center console. There's enough room under there to fit like a duffel bag almost, a purse, any sort of backpack would fit right under there, no problem. And then on the back side of the center console for the back seat, you have a huge reach-in storage area that's at least, I don't know, 10 inches deep maybe. And again, big enough to fit another small bag or, you know, kids' junk toys, whatever that floats around in the back seat if you have kids back there. So really nicely designed interior. It's gorgeous. The front seats are very comfortable. The back seats are very spacious. Again, without that transmission hump in the middle of the floor, it really feels open, and the kids had no problem getting in and out with their car seats. We don't test large car seats in this family anymore, thankfully, but booster seats are absolutely no problem. You get a 12.3-inch digital gauge cluster, a 12.3-inch touchscreen, wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, Sirius XM, Wi-Fi hotspot, the whole deal, HD radio. And this vehicle actually had USB-C ports in the front, so I'm not going to complain too much about that anymore. I think Hyundai will eventually bring that to all their vehicles, so I hope they do that. I will tell you, Jack, and I want to get your opinion here. I think Genesis infotainment system is a little bit flashier than Hyundai's, but it's still extremely easy to use. What do you think of the tech in this vehicle as opposed to like one of the competitors?
I think the tech is very, very good, very straightforward. I don't think they try and bowl you over with the tech. And I think that's a good thing. I mean, who needs that distraction or who needs a complication when you're trying to drive and make something happen on the infotainment screen or do something as simple as changing a radio station or all of that? I think they make it fairly simple. And that's the way it should be, really.
Yeah, they make it really easy. And, you know, it's very responsive. They've got enough power in the hardware to make the screen work well. It's very bright. It's very clear. But you get a 17-speaker Bang & Olufsen stereo with the top trim, and you get a glass roof, a panoramic glass roof. So really nice interior in this vehicle. Full suite of safety features, blind spot monitoring, forward collision alerts, automatic emergency braking, adaptive cruise control, and the fantastic blind spot camera system that Hyundai uses in some other models. So absolutely no complaints there. Jack, I think if I was going to buy this vehicle, I would probably opt for the mid-range trim for around $62,000 and save almost 10 grand on this thing. The performance is great, but I would opt for the longer range, and you still get a lot of great features in the mid-range trim too. So all around a great looking vehicle, great performing vehicle, and it's priced premium on the premium side. So that's the only thing to really remember here.
Yeah, big time on the premium side. And I think the arch enemy of this being successful is Tesla and the Tesla Model Y, which is kind of premium too and a lot less expensive. And
it's eligible for tax credits.
Yeah. So no, that's a tough one. I would think I would see more of them where I live, but I don't. And I think that's largely the reason. I think if people are buying an electric here, they're buying a Tesla. I mean, that's just what's happening. Mm-hmm. And it's probably the same around the country. Well, I was driving a vehicle that is the successor to a vehicle we've liked a lot, the Mazda CX-9. This is the CX-90, so you can see that the apple has not fallen too far from the tree here. And in a lot of ways, I think the complaint on the CX-9 was that it was a little too small, and I don't know that the CX-90 actually answers that problem, although you can get it in up to a 7 or an 8-passenger version. You can get it in 6, 7, and 8-passenger versions. It's actually available in a mind-boggling number of variations. I think there are 11 different trim levels, you know, 3 powertrains. It's just, for a vehicle that it doesn't do a lot of volume, I don't know how Mazda dealers can even order this thing and what they decide to have in stock and what they don't have in stock. Because if you're going across colors on 11 trims, I mean, you're ordering one heck of a lot of vehicles. It starts at about $41,000, which seems like a steal because you have this kind of premium-esque Mazda vehicle that is a 3-row, a lot of good stuff. It has 8-passenger seating, an 8-speaker audio system, an Apple CarPlay and Android Auto in this, a 10.25-inch, 10.25-inch, I guess is a better way to say it, 10.25, it looks good in print, not so much when you're talking, infotainment display. But the version I was driving was the S Premium Plus, which was one heck of a lot more expensive. I'm scrolling through all the other trim levels here to get to my notes on this particular vehicle. And it has a base price of $61,325. So that's a lot of money for this kind of smallish 3-row SUV, premium though it may be. What it has is just a ton of fun to drive. It has a ton of premium features. I mean, this is essentially a luxury vehicle or a luxury competitor. It just has a kind of a mass market badge on it. And I think kind of Mazda splits the difference maybe a little bit versus some of the others. What's your overall take on the value here of the CX-90? I think you've driven recently too.
Yeah, I drove the plug-in hybrid version, which is a little bit more expensive, but I think the value is there for the features and the quality you get. Mazda's build quality is fantastic. I think the interior, you know, there's very little differentiation, as you pointed out, between the brand and a premium brand, especially on the inside. And in terms of mass market brands, it's definitely one of the best driving 3-row SUVs out there, as was the CX-9 and the predecessors there too. So, you know, I think it's a great thing. I'm still baffled, just like you, that they're able to offer so many different configurations. It just seems like that would be such a cost driver for them. But I mean, great thing for buyers, right?
Yeah, I think so. If you can get the right configuration with the right color and all of that other stuff that you want. Certainly the S Premium has a bunch of great stuff. It has second row captain's chairs that I know you favor. I'm more of a bench seat than the second row kind of guy, but I have three kids and you have two, so maybe that accounts for that. It has quilted Nappa leather seating surfaces that are very lush. I mean, absolutely luxury brand. Heated first and second row seats, so you like that. Ventilated first and second row seats, too. Wood interior accents. I mean, this is kind of full-on luxury at $61,000, if you look at it that way. I think the only thing standing in the way there is it's got a Mazda badge on it, which isn't a three-pointed star or the propeller of a BMW or something like that. Again, the knock on it is it's not all that large. Rear cargo capacity is 14.9 cubic feet behind the third row. That isn't too bad, actually. 40 cubic feet behind the second row, which isn't all that great. And then 74 cubic feet with all the rear seats folded. So if you're looking for a lot of carrying space, there are other vehicles probably less expensive that you can buy. But to your point, Chris, this is a great driving vehicle. And the vehicle in the trim I was driving had 3.3-liter turbo engine with over 300 horsepower, a blast to drive. I don't know that a ton of people are looking for super driving enjoyment out of their three-row SUV, but if you were to want that, you know, this 340 horsepower out of this particular configuration, I think is a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, and as you point out, you know, with kids, we frequently haul our neighbors' kids around and we go other places too. That third row seat is really a challenge in the CX-90, as it was again in the CX-9. So that sleek shape and the beautiful outside lines don't always translate to the most spacious interior as we've seen with other vehicles, and that's certainly true here.
Yeah. Well, these are vehicles we like, but at the same time, there's some challenges with both of the two vehicles and mostly related to price or price value. This week, our special guest is Sri Pakkam. He's a Ford engineer and talking about the F-150 Lightning switchgear. So stay with us for that, and we'll be right back with that interview when we come back. So join us right after the break for more of America on the Road. I got this letter from a reader the other day, and I thought I'd share it with you. I'm on vacation on the beach in Key Biscayne and just finished reading Dance in the Dark. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Great plot and twists I never saw coming. You're really good at creating visual images. Congrats, you made my vacation all that more enjoyable. This is just the kind of feedback an author loves to hear. I'm Jack Nerad, host of America on the Road and the author of Dance in the Dark, a crime novel inspired by true crime. Many have told me that Dance in the Dark has all the realism of Fatal Photographs, my true crime account of the famous bathing suit model murder case. That's great to hear because Dance in the Dark is filled with suspense, plot twists, and surprises, but at the same time, it's a believable story in the tradition of writers like James M. Cain, Jim Thompson, and Elroy Leonard. Dance in the Dark is available in paperback and Kindle ebook form from Amazon.com, and it's available direct from the publisher emlancey.com as well. If you have a chance, please look for it. If it makes your vacation better, we'll both be happy. That's Dance in the Dark by Jack R. Nerad at Amazon.com or emlancey.com. Thanks for giving it a look. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nerad back with you at the Chicago Auto Show, where we're in the Ford stand talking about various Ford things. And with me is a great guest, Sri Pakkam. And we're going to be talking about Ford F-150 Lightning switchgear.
Correct. That's right.
So, start talking. Tell me about Ford Lightning switchgear.
Well, I'll begin one level higher than that. So what we do in motorsports is a program called EV Demonstrators, where we've taken a bunch of different, you know, vehicles that we've made EVs out of, Mach-Es, Transits, and we've made these really high-performance versions of them. So you've seen the Mach-E 1400s, Supervans, Cobra Jet 1400. And what we try to do with that is push the limits on all these EV technologies, right? So we've experimented and technologically pushed the limits on battery and cell chemistry, motor inverter technology, aerodynamics, power discharge rates, overall vehicle efficiency.
So kind of overall hot rodding electric vehicles, right?
Yeah. And just really pushing it to see, okay, what can we do and what improvements can we push back to our consumer products that you see all around here? And the latest in that line of technological exploration is what we're calling the F-150 Lightning Switchgear. And this is all about chassis, because like I said, with the other stuff, we've played with different technical areas.
Right.
This one is all about chassis and suspension, with the singular goal of figuring out how we can take this EV and go high-speed Baja-style off-roading.
Okay.
Successfully.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Make it something right. That is...
And you've got some challenges there. You know, weight being probably a major challenge.
A huge
right?
part of it.
Yeah.
But what we're finding is, and again, this is why we do this, right? You know theoretically what the weight's going to do, what the detriments are of weight. But then you also know that there's some benefits to how that weight is situated on the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
But until you do it, you don't know how good it can be. So that's what we found here. Normally when we're running, you know, even this, the 4400s or on our Bronco Raptors, F-150 Raptors, right? You got a large engine up front. And that changes the way you drive it off-road. There's
sure.
a weight distribution that's
yeah.
much more forward.
Yeah.
With this,
you get air and you're going to, you know, nose in, you know,
correct.
Right?
Yeah. Like all our drivers like Vaughn Gittin and those guys, they have a certain style of driving with that. They've had to change it up a little bit with this because all your weight is sitting in between
the axles.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's way down low. So when you're doing, you know, aggressive yaw at 80 miles an hour, the way this responds is quite different to how these other off-roaders that we do respond. And so it's a different way of going fast off-road. It's just a different flavor. There's no noise on it because it's a base truck, right? It's got all the NVH that an XLT would have, and there's no
noise, vibration, and harshness.
Correct. Yeah, sorry. Shouldn't use too much jargon, but yeah. So there's no noise from an engine or from the wind noise or any of that, right? It's just very silent, like a Lightning normally is if you've driven an F-150 Lightning, right?
Absolutely.
That's exactly what it is. So you've got all those parts and all you hear are rocks and, you know, bushings and suspension working, and it's an entirely different experience of going off-road, but it's still extremely fast. I mean, really, really fast. We were all kind of like, whoa, bracing when we get in it.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, very different way of doing it. But what that tells us is, okay, I've changed suspension on it in order to go fast off-road. Now, let's see what it does to the whole rest of the truck that we didn't change. So frame.
Ah, interesting, yeah.
Yeah, frame, underbody shields, all that stuff, bone stock. Primary drive unit, secondary drive unit, bone stock.
Hmm.
So you've got half shafts that are now pushing up at a different angle into these primary and secondary drive units. What does that do?
Yeah.
What do you have to do to bushings and bearings?
Did you change, wheel travel and that kind of
thing?
Yeah,
wheel travel is different now. So we've got 13 inches of travel.
Uh-huh.
What does that do to the rest of the stuff around it? That's what we're exploring right now. I mean, we are literally in conversations about that with the engineering team from a regular Lightning. I have a conversation tomorrow in the morning too.
Okay.
It's good insight for them into a use case they would never have explored otherwise.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you think there's some learnings that they can put into effect on just the consumer trucks?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely there is. I mean, we are in the infancy of playing with this ourselves. You know, we're 3 or 4 sessions into it. And as we go more and more into the kind of technological exploration with that, there's going to be more lessons. And that's the idea behind everything we do at Motorsports, right? We push it to the limit and beyond so that others don't have to.
Right, right.
So,
what are some of the key surprises? Were there surprises or did it kind of go along, you know, largely as planned?
No. Nothing ever goes
That's why you develop cars, right?
Exactly. Yeah, when you're pushing the limits, nothing goes according to plan. You just have to be agile enough to react and know what you're doing and what you're dealing with. So, for instance, some positive surprises were, like I said, the way it handled off-road. The robustness of the base Lightning has also been awesome. I mean, we always knew how tough it was, but that whole built for tough thing that we go on about,
The real deal.
It was, yeah, I know, like, who would have thought, right? But it was awesome because, like I said, the shields, we didn't have to change a thing. We've been going very fast off-road, hitting rocks and stuff, and it's been great. Other little surprises that we've had to design for, there's sensors down there in the rear suspension arm that are, you know, reading all kinds of different inputs from your wheel and tire. and feed that back into the controller. And one of them is the ABS sensor, right? So we had very grippy tires on there, and they were shooting rocks up in a way that you'd never have done in a standard Lightning.
Yeah.
And those were knocking that sensor off and, you know, cutting power or derating.
Yeah.
And so we're like, whoa.
Okay. Oh, it is a problem. So,
we had to build a little, small, tiny little metal shield that was just fabricated on site, like as we were testing.
How about, battery durability? I mean, it's been great. Worried about the integrity of the battery pack.
We have seen nothing to have, you know, indicate any kind of modification or design change on our exploration so far. Mm-hmm. It's been robust. Like I said, the shield under it was very, very tough. So it's been great so far, touch wood.
How about instant torque? I mean, you got tons of torque you can deliver right away, right?
I'm glad you mentioned that, actually. That's the other positive. I was going on about weight distribution, but the instantaneous torque is the more obvious benefit. You just, it caught, again, all of us by surprise. When we were sitting there going over rocks at 20 miles an hour, and then, boom, you're at 80 all of a sudden. It's an alien experience in that sort of environment. You know, you're not used to that, especially when there's no audio signal of a powertrain.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So
it doesn't get louder.
No, it just sits there and it goes faster. No drama.
Well, it's also linear, right? I mean, there's no gears to change. And
no
all
gears
of that.
To change. Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. So that's what we've been doing. We haven't really seen much derating, and we've just been going at it very hard. But again, the base cooling package has been really good. Mm-hmm. And we'll keep pushing it to see what the limit is, of course.
Yeah.
But so far, it's small
stuff. What are your next steps? What are you planning?
Next steps, we're just going, you know, to other venues to test. Like, we'll be going to a few other places this year. Not all of it's planned out. We're still going through that.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is to keep testing and keep working with our counterparts on the production side to help improve what they're putting out.
It's so exciting. Really cool stuff. I can't wait to see more. And I'm so glad I got a chance to talk to you.
And
Sri
I'm
Pakam,
sure
thanks so much for being with us.
Yep. Thank you very much.
We appreciate it. And that was our interview with Sri Pakam. He is with Ford, of course, talking about this Lightning switchgear. I think it's a really cool concept. I think what they're doing with this and using this is a kind of a test bed for things they can do with electric vehicles and just using all the advantage electric gives for off-roading, including instant torque, a ton of instant torque. But it's a pretty cool vehicle all around, isn't it, Chris?
I really like it. You know, I'm looking at this. I was thinking this when they first came out with the F-150 Lightning. I was wondering what they would do with maybe a Raptor-style vehicle. And, you know, while this is definitely not a production truck at all, it certainly looks the part, doesn't it?
Yeah. This is what they call an off-road demonstrator vehicle. They built this in conjunction with RTR vehicles. And it's really a test bed. I mean, they're using this. And as we heard from Pakam, they get this out in the dirt. This isn't just something that sits on the show floor and then is in a warehouse in between auto shows. This is something that really gets used. And it has a ton of good stuff on it. I think for off-roading, electric offers some major advantages that I think this is utilizing.
Yeah, I think the challenge, you know, Rivian faced this when they first started talking about adventuring trucks. You know, they were going to install chargers at trailheads and things. Like, I think that the challenge here is the further you get away from civilization, the further you get away from the ability to recharge yourself. But as you point out, there's a lot of cool stuff here. It's got Nitto Grid Grappler 18-inch tires, 37x18-inch tires, Fox shocks. And I said it definitely looks like a Raptor, you know, if all but the logo. So, you know, this is a great thing. Ford did this with their other vehicles. They had the Supervan, the Mustang Mach-E 1400, the Cobra Jet. And as you point out, they used all of these, right? They raced the Supervan on Pikes Peak. They've been drag racing the Cobra Jet, you know, setting records with it. So I think they may even be pioneering an electric drag racing formula with the NHRA or whatever it is. So definitely cool that they're getting these things out and getting them dirty.
Yeah, I think they would love to light up some excitement around Lightning, as we reported earlier in the show. I mean, Lightning sales are just not nearly what Ford expected them to be. And I don't think it's Ford's fault. I think a lot of people expected electric vehicle sales to be much stronger than they have been. It's interesting to me that they're not stronger in some ways, because I'm like, when I drive down the street, gasoline is now $5.30 a gallon here in Southern California as we enter the spring and summer driving period. So, you would think from a cost to own point of view, some of these electrics are going to pencil, but I guess a lot of people aren't seeing that out of electrics, or they're seeing the problems with charging, as you point out, being a bigger hurdle than the cost.
Yeah, and you know, it's a shame because the F-150 Lightning in particular has the capability. It has a decent range. It has, you know, all the things that people like about the F-150, which is still the best-selling pickup truck in its class. So, you know, it's kind of tough. The price is probably still the big barrier here. But as I've said many times, and we've talked about this, you know, even testing the Genesis that I did this past week, which has a reasonable range and I didn't drive that much, it's a huge hassle to own an EV in a place that isn't Southern California or New York or New Jersey if you can't charge at home. And that's just, it's a shame that you know, that's the way it is. But we're maybe a little bit cart ahead of the horse in some ways here.
Yeah. Well, it seems like the Lightning gets all the headlines. And what is less reported is the fact that the hybrid version of the F-150 is doing really, really well. And to me, that's the kind of the arch enemy of the Lightning, right? I mean, you can have a lot of the benefits of a hybrid drive, so kind of electric drive, and you know, fuel economy advantages certainly out of that vehicle, as opposed to, you know, tying yourself to something that doesn't have the utility, isn't quite as useful all around.
Yeah, the hybrid definitely, especially for like contractors and businesses that have fleets that operate in a limited area in town, the hybrid provides a lot of the benefits of the electric, and then you don't have to bother to charge it at the end of the night. So I can see that. And it's also cheaper, significantly so in some configurations. So it'll be interesting to see if Ford's able to kind of bring this back out again.
Yeah. What people don't grasp, and I don't know that they ever will, because I've been, you know, beating this drum for the better part of 30 years, is cost to own analysis. When people are looking at vehicle cost, they kind of look at the purchase price, and that's what they go with. They don't, you know, pay much attention to what it's going to cost to own over time, both in terms of depreciation and in terms of fuel costs, all of those kinds of things. One thing that kind of stands against that, though, is I'm hearing that electric vehicles, in terms of insurance costs, that's a big problem these days too. I mean, they cost more to insure, because when one of those gets hurt, it costs a lot to fix.
Yeah, and to be fair to EVs, that's kind of true across the board right now with all the advanced safety equipment. I mean, even to have a windshield replaced, we had my wife's Volvo windshield replaced a few months ago, and you know, the Safelite was like, yes, we can recalibrate all your sensors and everything, and they couldn't do it, so we had to go to the dealership and pay some more money to get that done. So, but EVs in particular have, you know, pretty stout repair bills.
Absolutely true. Well, when we come back, we will have the final segment, kind of summing up the week, maybe a listener question or two. So stay with us for that, and we'll be right back right here on America on the Road. Welcome back to America on the Road with Chris T. This is John. We're right back with you, and we're so glad you're with us. Thanks so much for staying with us on America on the Road. We do appreciate it. And I think we have time for another question, Chris, so let's go to that. This is a pretty good question, too. My grandmother is in her 80s, and I don't think she should be driving anymore, but she insists she's okay to drive. Is there anything we can do about that? This is from Bethany, and she lives in Santa Cruz, California. What's your take on this issue?
Well, my grandmother is also in her 80s and also refuses to give up her driver's license, and it's a conversation that we've had a few times, and thankfully she drives short distances to the grocery store and back. She doesn't drive at night and never when it rains and things like that. This is a tough nut to crack. And, you know, I think we can sit here and talk about how we should retest older people when they reach a certain age and, you know, maybe need to reevaluate their driving ability. But I, at the same time, I think about it, when I reach 80, am I going to feel okay about that? I don't know that I will, Jack. And I also don't know that there's an easy answer to this. What do you think?
I don't think there is. You know, my stepmother, who was 96, just passed away, and she was driving up until about age 95. And only quit driving because she was essentially hospitalized or couldn't move around. And I was always concerned about that. I live several thousand miles away from where she used to live. Now she's up in heaven, so she's very nearby. But I just didn't know what to do about it. And, you know, she got into a little fender bender accident, I think at age 93 or something like that. Might have been her fault, might not have been. It's hard to tell. She wanted that. She wanted to be able to go to the hairdresser, the beauty shop, as she called it. And she wanted to be able to go to the grocery store. I mean, she lived in an assisted living place. So she didn't really need to go out, but she wanted to. And I kind of get that. And I'm with you. I when I'm 80, which is a lot closer to me than it is to you, I'm not sure how I'm going to feel about that whole thing.
Yeah. And if you're going to have the conversation about taking the license away, you also need to have the conversation about, well, who's going to pick up the slack, right? If this person is living independently, not in a home, or with other people, who's going to help them take them to the store, take them to pick up their medicine to the doctor. And a lot of places have programs that help fill in the gaps like that. But again, this is, from my perspective, it's, you know, their feeling of independence, their feelings of, you know, dignity and all that stuff. And it really is hard to have that conversation without injuring either of them.
Yeah, absolutely true. Well, time is up, so we've got to say goodbye here. But before we go, I'd like to mention my newest book, Dance in the Dark, which is a crime thriller inspired by true crime. It's available at Amazon, both an ebook and paperback. If you like our show, please pass it on to others who might like it. Listen to it on this radio station each week. Let your friends know where you listen to it. And of course, you can get a podcast, can't you, Chris?
Yes, you can. A quick Google search will reveal the America on the Road podcast on all the major platforms, Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio. So pick your favorite, leave us a review, follow us, and download our podcast. It'll help us out a lot. And we hope that you enjoy the show.
We do. And our thanks to our Sports Byline Network stations for carrying America on the Road. Most of all, thanks to you for listening to America on the Road. You're the reason we do what we do. We're happy to do what we do, so we thank you for that. And thank you for being with us. Join us again next time for another edition of America on the Road. Inner peace, self-respect, emotional fulfillment. Are you finding these worthwhile goals difficult to achieve? Are you looking for success and satisfaction in your job but not finding it? Are you thinking about starting a business but don't know what will set it apart from all the others? You can continue to struggle on your own, or you can unleash the undeniable power of the GR Factor. I'm Jack R. Nered, host of America on the Road. For years, I've found success in business and in my personal life by using the concepts I outline clearly in my book, The GR Factor. Your best self is inside you right now, just waiting to be unleashed. Inspiring all that is the best in you, the GR Factor will guide your journey, elevate your game, recast your relationships, and transform your daily life. If you want to change your life for the better, read the GR Factor. It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and at emlancey.com. That's the GR Factor by Jack R. Nered. Thanks for checking it out.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.